Good evening. I'd like to call the June 18th, 2013 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? Roll call of members.
Mr. Dennis? Ms. Chack? Ms. Chack? I'm here. Ms. Herrera will be arriving later this evening. Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAfee?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne, who's asked to be excused. Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
And Mr. Dennis?
Here.
13 members present. Oops, Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Thank you. Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
I would like to ask for an executive session at the end of our meeting to discuss personnel issues. And we're going to reorder things a little bit. I think under GO, I think we'll take the unfinished business that's on the end of the agenda. Item number 15 can be considered or withdrawn or whatever Pat's going to do with that one. We'll do it all at once.
What we're going to do is postpone that discussion. I'm going to move to postpone that discussion to the next meeting, and I'll explain why.
All right, and we'll take that action under your report instead of at the end, very end of the meeting. So, all right, thank you. Are there any members of the public here for public privilege of the floor? All right, well, I have the honor of asking for Aaron Simmons and his family and friends to come up to the front for the Distinguished Youth Award. I'm nominating Aaron Simmons for the Distinguished Youth Award for the month, and I'm going to read from pieces of nomination form from Wendy Hoos, the Varna Volunteer Fire Company, Don Potter, Chair of the Varna Community Association, and Pastor Dennis Huff from the Varna United Methodist Church. This is from Wendy. I have known Aaron closely for over 5 years. I've had the pleasure of watching Aaron mature and take on additional responsibilities, yet still maintain a sense of humor, helpfulness, kindness, tolerance, and acceptance of the diversity of others. Aaron has a strong commitment to his family, friends, and community, and is always willing to help at a moment's notice. After the recent death of his grandfather, Aaron took over a lot of the yard work and chores. He also helps on the grandparents' farm. You come over to our house after this, if we're done here. Got some chores for you. Aaron is highly motivated in the Varna community and regularly participates with the Varna Volunteer, Varna United Methodist Church, the Varna Community Association, and the Varna Volunteer Fire Company at their events. Aaron is counting the days until he's 16 and able to join the fire company and become a firefighter and emergency medical technician to be better able to serve the community in which he lives. Aaron is also a member of the Boy Scouts of America, Troop 55, Ellis Hollow, and has served as a mentor to the Cub Scouts, in which his younger brother, Brad, participates. Hi, Brad. The thing that most impresses me about Aaron is his tolerance of others and his ability to sense what is morally right and make the correct decisions, even when they are hard. Aaron is a pleasure to be around. His sense of humor, friendliness, and commitment to his family, friends and community are always evident. Aaron will certainly act at the local level, but soon globally as well. Next month, he'll head to Europe, where he'll serve as a student ambassador, helping people in Greece and Italy through the People to People program. Is that Greece and Italy? Okay. When Aaron, and this is from Pastor Huff. When Aaron travels with the People to People program this summer, I know that he will be an excellent example to those he travels with, and that he will also exhibit the pride of American youth to the people in all of the countries he'll be visiting. And Dawn Potter wrote, Aaron Summons is a remarkable young man. He's lived in Varna for most of his 15 years, and she's known Aaron for all those years. I'm impressed by his maturity, thoughtfulness, and good decision-making. He attends almost every fundraising program and event at the Varna Community Association and is eager to lend a hand to anyone without ever grumbling or complaining about the task. He's been seen helping carry trays of food for the elderly and handicapped patrons at our dinners, washing dishes, sweeping floors, or just greeting visitors. I can think of no one in Aaron's age group who is better deserving or who has impressed me as much as he has. He's a joy to interact with, and I have every confidence that Aaron will accomplish whatever he sets his mind to. Aaron is one of the kindest young men I've come to know. So, thank you, Aaron. Congratulations. Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award presented to Aaron Simmons in recognition of your outstanding commitment to your community. Yeah, Mom, come around. That's good. Outstanding commitment to your community, June 2013, sponsored by Bangs Ambulance Service, Tompkins County Legislature, Huger Radio Group, Purity Ice Cream, and A&B Awards Engraving. So there's that. And memorable goodies here, like a gift certificate of Purity and couple of other things. First aid kit, which you'll probably you know how to use. And I printed a couple copies of the recommendation letter. Okay? All right. So please. Absolutely.
I'd like to say thank you for this honor. I have realized I have done a lot in the community, but recognition was not necessary. It's just who I am as a person, and it makes me that much stronger. I'd like to say thank you to the Varna Volunteer Fire Company, Varna Community Association, and Varna Methodist Church, along with my family and friends, for all their support they've given me in my journey so far. Thank you.
Aaron is a rising 11th grader at Ithaca High School, right? So good luck. Have a great time in Europe and come back and ready to work. And great to know you. Thank you very much. Good. Thank you all. Legislator privilege. Anyone? Frank.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I wanted to, in case you missed it in the paper, I wanted to bring to your attention that our county was recognized by the state in receiving the Bob Arnold Award for Records Management. Some of us that were involved in bringing that program to the county a number of years ago were quite pleased to see that. Maureen Reynolds and Aurora and Greg Potter went down to receive it. And I think it's quite a recognition for us to have gotten that award. To the best of my knowledge, if not every municipality in the county, including the city, but close to it, we've brought in a little over $2 million. It's something over that to every municipality in the county for records management. And as a former commissioner at the state level for archives, I want to tell you it's really an honor for this county to get a pat on the back like that. The second item, one part of it's a little humorous, but one part of it's a little sad. In case some of you, now, Dooley, I don't want to embarrass you, but Dooley and I, Mike Lane, might remember Howard Stevenson, who was our county highway superintendent for a number of years. He was the commissioner before Bill Mobbs, and he passed away.
Just you, Frank.
Just me?
Yeah.
He passed away about a week ago, and it was kind of sad. He was a good highway commissioner. But the humorous part, and Jeff Smith would appreciate this, it's a little, and Ed in his former capacity with Public Works. Howard was a little bit of a radical, and the county legislature, in those days, it was either Gus Freeman or Jim Ray that chaired the Public Works. At that time, the committees were run together. It was Planning and Public Works were one committee. They wouldn't approve his funding for painting the county's trucks. So Howard latched on. You ever wonder how our trucks started out as bright orange and then became yellow? Howard ran every one of the vehicles into Public Works and spray painted them the brightest orange he could find just as a protest. And be careful with the budget, because if Jeff doesn't get what he wants, we may be subject to that again. But anyway, it's kind of sad, but he was quite a decent guy to deal with. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Frank. Peter.
Just before saying what I was going to say, believe it or not, I remember Howard Stevenson. When Irene and I bought our first house, maybe 5 years after moving here, he was the person that did the house check on it, and I was very positively impressed by his work. So, I would like to discuss with you some thinking I have done about an item that that we've talked about at great length, an extremely important item, namely global warming. We've had a lot of occasion over the past month or two to think about global warming. I can think of a lot of things that I've read. I've read about the Environmental Protection Agency published a report saying that the amount of methane in the air had decreased over time. There was a report, a front page article in the Sunday Times by a woman who said the world is doomed if we can't convince China to stop using coal and to use natural gas instead. And we had a talk from Bob Howarth and Tony Ingrafia, who were talking about something else, but it reminded me that they have said that the world will not survive if we do talk China into changing, replacing coal with natural gas. And I have found this discussion very complicated, hard to follow, and hard to have an opinion on. And so, the other thing that came up was AES, that also impinged on this. And so what I did, I don't exactly know why, but about a month ago I said I was going to look through the data on the Internet and see what I could find and try to see if I could find any support for either one of these two positions or what was there. I honestly had no particular predisposition to find one or the other. So I spent a fair amount of time, and I did in fact find data on the Internet. It wasn't so easy to find, but I found a couple of pieces, three different pieces, that enabled me to try to calculate for myself exactly what the effect was of substituting natural gas for coal. And what I'm going to tell you comes from those three articles that I found. One was a report that was done recently by the Environmental Protection Agency, a huge report. I didn't read the whole report. I read the executive summary. The executive summary was 25 pages long and had a whole lot of data in it. The other thing that I found was an article by the Energy Information something or other of the United States government, which talked about comparisons of the various fossil fuels and nuclear fuels and so forth for this. I used that. I used an article in Wikipedia, which is not often thought of as a reliable source, but I found it reliable, and I found some numbers in there that I couldn't find elsewhere. And having done that, I tried to make a calculation. And I think I understand the situation a lot better than I did before that. So what I'd like to do is take you very quickly as I can, through the calculation and see, to tell you the facts that I found. So, there are three fossil fuels. The three fossil fuels are coal, petroleum, and natural gas. And they all burn, they combine with oxygen, and produce energy. The first one, coal, is simple. It's carbon. It combines with oxygen and forms carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is the major, as you know, the major greenhouse gas. It's simple. The next one is natural gas, which is methane. And methane is one carbon and four hydrogens. And it, too, burns and gives off energy. But it gives off energy in a more complicated way. The products of combustion are carbon dioxide, like coal, but also water when the hydrogen burns. And water, of course, is not a greenhouse gas. And much of the methane's energy, namely about half of it, comes from the burning of hydrogen rather than the burning of coal. Therefore, the same amount of energy, there's about half as much greenhouse gas that's produced by burning methane than by burning coal for the same energy. Not greenhouse gas, I shouldn't say that, CO2. Petroleum comes in between. Petroleum is a series of a lot of complicated molecules. Typically, the molecules of petroleum act like CH4, they act like CH2. So it has got, it too burns, gets some of its energy from burning hydrogen, but it doesn't get as much of its energy burning hydrogen because it only has two hydrogens instead of four. And so for the same amount of energy, the greenhouse gas produced by petroleum is halfway in between that produced by coal and that produced by natural gas. Now, that's simple enough, and that's, of course, what makes it the fact that natural gas produces half the CO2 for the same amount of energy is what made people so excited about it. There's another thing that is true, namely that if you burn methane compared to coal to produce electricity, the fact that methane burns at a higher temperature means that it's more efficient in turning heat energy into electrical energy, and that gives it an additional advantage compared to coal. Now, as we all know, if that was all there was to say, there'd be absolutely no question that the right thing to do is to convert to methane. But of course, there's something else, and the something else is the possibility of leakage of the methane, because of the reason that is of great importance is that, as you know, methane is very much more is very much better at the greenhouse effect than carbon dioxide by a factor of, I forget the numbers, about 20 or 30, something like that.
105.
Okay. So I'll get to that in a minute. Now, the big question, of course, is exactly how much methane is leaked. And we have heard a lot of different numbers for that. But the article that I am quoting is an article that was written by the Environmental Protection Agency. And they did a study of exactly how much methane was produced in the world and what was responsible for producing it. So the numbers are the following, that the amount of methane produced is about 9% of the amount of CO2. But that's 9% with the additional factor of whatever it is you take for the greenhouse effect gas of methane compared to coal. It's not per molecule, not 9% by molecule, but it's what they call is carbon dioxide equivalent. So in carbon dioxide, if two things have the same carbon dioxide equivalent, they have the same greenhouse gas effect. So in terms of greenhouse gas equivalents, the methane that is leaked from the earth is 8.8% of the greenhouse gas that's done by carbon dioxide. Then they break this down into a large number of categories. The most important is the leakage of methane. Of that 8.8%, a quarter of it comes from the leakage of methane. Another quarter comes from what's called enteric fermentation, which means gas production by cows. And that's about the equal, that's also about 25%. The other ones are landfills, manure management, coal mining, petroleum systems, wastewater treatment, forest land reforesting, a whole bunch of things. But the four major ones are natural gas and cow generated gas, which is 25% apiece, and then landfills, which is about 20%, and coal mining, which is something like about 10 or 12%. So those are the numbers that enable you to calculate exactly what the greenhouse power, the greenhouse effect produced by methane, petroleum, and coal. One other thing that you have to talk about is what do people do with this thing, by burning coal and by burning methane and by burning petroleum. So coal is almost exclusively used for electricity production. Very little coal is burned for anything else. What methane is used for is electricity production and home heating. That's what methane is. Petroleum, which, by the way, is the biggest producer of greenhouse gas by a lot, is for vehicles, driving cars, and also for heating houses. That's the effect. So the question one has to answer is the following. One has to compare coal to natural gas for producing electricity, and you have to compare natural gas to petroleum for heating houses. Okay? Now, the other is that there's this complicated thing about how you calculate there's a big difference between carbon dioxide and methane. Carbon dioxide, if you put it in the atmosphere, it stays there forever. It doesn't decay all by itself. Methane does decay by itself. So you start off with one unit of methane, and after many years, you've got 0.01 units of methane. So how do you take account of this? And the way that people take account of this by saying, let's quote a number, which is the average amount of methane that would be in the atmosphere for a certain number of years. So you can call that whatever number you want it. You can call it 20 years or 20 years, 25 years, 100 years. It's pretty much the same amount of methane, but you multiply it by a longer time period, so it becomes a less per year. Okay? So that's really all I have to say, except I'm going to pass around a graph, and then I will be finished with. So what I've done on this graph, and if you want to pass these around, I have enough copies for everyone. So what I've calculated is the comparison of petroleum and natural gas for residential heating and petroleum and natural gas and coal for electricity production. And it's two sides of this paper. One side, I take the 100-year horizon, which is the number that which is the number that you find in most of the technical articles. And the other, I take the 25-year horizon, which is what Bob Howarth produces. And if you look at this, I think it's clear what the conclusion is. The conclusion is that not changing natural gas for coal for electricity production is a bad mistake. That changing natural gas for petroleum on the 25-year horizon is a wash. They're the same. And trading natural gas for petroleum for residential heating on the 100-year thing, it turns out that there's an advantage of about, 15 or 20% natural gas produces less greenhouse gas. And that's what I wanted to say. If anyone's had any questions, I'd be pleased to answer it. But
well, let me ask you, Peter, which EPA study and which EIA source did you use? EIA publishes more than one report every year.
The most recent one.
Well, EPA has published a number of studies, and they don't all agree with each other. You have often said to us on any number of issues, well, I went and talked to a friend of mine on the faculty, and this is the world expert on such and such, and this is what he says. So I'm curious, did you take your information to Bob Howarth or Tony Ingraffi and ask them, to talk about
sure.
this? Did you?
Oh, did I? No. I didn't take it to anybody. I just worked by myself.
Okay. Maybe that would be a good idea because I guess I would say that what you find on the Internet, there are a lot of ways to interpret that. Let me also point out that by policy, it is the law created, in part after the Kyoto Protocols in, I think, 1995, the federal government arbitrarily decided, along with the rest of the world, that they would use the 100-year time frame for a calculation of greenhouse gas emissions. Now, at the time, they had to pick a number. They picked that number. It was, by policy, you could pick any 75, 83, whatever. They picked 100 years. That was how many years ago? I think the point of Bob and Tony's work is that the 100-year time frame, we don't have 100 years to figure this out, and it matters profoundly what happens in the next 20 years. By the way, they use 20, not 25. It matters profoundly what happens in the next 20 years and how much greenhouse gas emissions are produced through our activities. Absolutely, methane is produced a lot of different ways. So is carbon dioxide. But I would say that, for one thing, the whole issue of combustion is only the first part of the equation, and that was what Bob and Tony have talked about and tried to measure, was how much methane is leaked throughout the entire production process, and they've seen so far that peer-reviewed studies in the field measurements, have shown that their calculations were modest and that leakage is significantly worse than they projected it to be. And I will say one of the problems we have here is that the industry knows pretty well how much they lose through leakage, and that's proprietary information. So the scientists have to extrapolate and don't have the information that actually would allow us to really do the right kinds of measurements. So I hope you'll go and talk to Tony and Bob and see what they have to say about it. I think they probably would be the right sources of information to really to bounce your ideas off of. I think I saw Carol, then Brian, then Dooley, then Mike.
Yeah. I was also going to respond to Peter, and I appreciate that you've taken an interest and are doing this research, and I would also urge you to talk directly to the sources of the information. One of the things that really changed between the earlier EPA studies and EIA information and that which has come out more recently has to do with the difference in methane that leaks between the traditional method of gas drilling, where you stick a pipe in the ground and there's gas under pressure that comes out, and that produced by the newer shale gas method. One of the, to cut through all of the lengthy explanation about the items that burn, as you did, in the long run, carbon dioxide is a much bigger problem in the atmosphere. The reason that methane is a problem, if you know, any other point in history, it would be true that we would need to worry about carbon more. The reason we have to worry about methane right now is because we're already at 400 parts per million in the atmosphere. And because methane, yes, it lasts shorter in the atmosphere, but it increases the level faster. And so that right now, because we're at 400 parts per million in the atmosphere, we can't accept anymore. But the crux of the matter has to do with something you said much earlier on, which was we need to find something else. And that something else is not something that gets burned in this way. That something else has to be wind, water, and sun, and geothermal. We shouldn't be having this debate. These are false choices when we have the technical capability to create as much power as we can from wind, water, and sun sources. We could be saving this gas and the burning of the gas or the oil or the coal for the things that only that could solve. So I think that was the crux of what we heard from them. But if people are interested, I would encourage us to continue the discussion by bringing in the scientists who are right up the hill, and not just Bob and Tony. There may be others who'd like to come and address us. And we should continue that conversation. So thank you, Peter, for helping us to continue it. But
not sure we can get on our dance card again.
There are others. Yeah. There was a gentleman that we heard from Cortland, from SUNY Cortland, mm-hmm. That a group of us talked to about New York State energy policy, who might be willing to come and talk to us as well.
Okay. I've got Brian Dooley, Mike, and you back on the line, Peter. Brian. Dooley.
I originally was just going to mention the second West Hill meeting on how the land the county owns may be being developed, but if you're going to do that as part of a committee report, I will do that.
Go right ahead. People are listening.
So the Climate Showcase community proposal, there's already been one public hearing in the West Hill neighborhood, and there was a strong request from a few people there to have yet another meeting. So there has been a second public information meeting scheduled for Wednesday, July 10th at 6:30 p.m. at the Museum of the Earth. And now I also want to suggest to Peter, if you have more time and continuing interest, and I'm delighted that climate change is on your radar now, that the IPCC ongoing updates and reports from their work groups give you the most recent climate scientists' analyses. They're not local, but they're available on the internet.
I would also suggest physicians, scientists, and engineers for healthy energy. PSE.org is a source with a lot of peer-reviewed articles right there on their site. Mike?
Peter, thanks for that research and informing us of what you found. It's certainly a controversial issue, but I think you attacked it at using scientific method, which is looking at it and questioning what other scientists are saying. You know, you may be right or they may be right. I don't know. But it's interesting to listen to this. I meant to bring my copy, but do we all get copies of the Empire State Report in our mailbox? It's a magazine that's put out, I don't know, every couple of months. If we don't have it, I'd like to make a copy of an article that was in this month's edition. It's about the Constitutional Convention in New York, which will be voted on in 2017. And it's by Dr. Gerald Benjamin. He, along with Hank DeLay here from Tompkins County, are probably the two authorities on the Constitution as far as Constitutional Convention in the past and the possibility of one in the future. And Dr. Benjamin lays out in about four pages, very interestingly, the traditional problem with getting voters to vote for a constitutional convention. In New York, the problem is that many groups do not like the way the delegates are elected and who can be elected delegates. So this comes up each time the constitutional convention plebiscite is looked at, and everyone says, well, we ought to put through an amendment to the Constitution to change the way the delegates are picked. And somebody says, well, it's, you got 20 years, let's get that done. And it doesn't get done because the people sitting in office have no reason to change the constitutional structure in New York or review it. And then as it approaches and we get closer, we're only 4 years out, they begin to say, oh, well, we haven't got time to change it now because it takes a constitutional amendment. It's simply a way of maintaining the status quo, preserving incumbency, just like the failure to have an independent redistricting commission at the state level preserves incumbency for those in office. And I want to make a copy of those for you since we don't all get that. It's a great magazine. Everybody should have it, and they send it, I think, free if you ask them to do that. Lots of articles about New York State. I've been reading it since I was back at mayor in the village of Dryden. But we need to think about the Constitutional Convention. I'd hate to see it go down at this chance and not have another one until 2037.
Hey, Mike, have you read Hank DeLay's book on the Constitutional Convention?
Yes.
Yeah, nice. It's
really, he gave me a copy.
Oh, yeah. I had to buy mine.
What can I say?
We could have Hank do a presentation on it.
Yeah. Well, he's excellent. Mm-hmm. He could do it, too. Dr. Benjamin came up and spoke one time. Mm-hmm. He's at, I believe, SUNY New Paltz.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Peter?
I just like to respond very briefly to the things that were said. Dooley, for a very long time, I have been deeply concerned about global warming, and the thought has gone through my mind in a lot of things that I've did, either both on the town and in the legislature. I didn't do anything except take the numbers that are written down here. And if these numbers are right, then this graph is right. So the only question is, are these numbers wrong? And by the way, I did consult one expert, namely an old colleague of mine, to say, will you look over my arithmetic and make sure that I didn't make any mistakes in it? And he did do that. Oh, actually, he found a mistake, which I then fixed, okay? But that was the only thing that I consulted someone about, because what I did does not require talking to anybody. I'm taking these numbers at face value, the numbers that I found in this book. And if, in fact, these numbers are wrong, and wrong by a big factor, then this is, I can't imagine, this is a bombshell. I mean, this is more shocking than all the other things that we've heard about that have happened by the government. That these numbers are wrong by large factors, it's shocking. I find that very difficult. I myself find that very difficult to, in my dealing with government agencies and doing this kind of work and work that I understand, I have always found them to be reliable, okay? So that I would be completely shocked by that, to find out that that was true. So all I've done is just taken those numbers, and if these numbers are right, then it's a mistake not to trade coal-produced electricity for natural gas electricity. That's my final line, okay?
And I just want to say, not to prolong, but it is correct when you're just looking at combustion, but it is actually a mistake by the federal government that they count the 100-year time frame, not the 20-year time frame.
The what?
That they measure emissions based on a 100-year time frame and not 20. And that was 18 years ago that decision was made. And, you know, the world uses the same number. I think in Howard's research, you see he uses both numbers. He'll say this is what it is on the 20-year time frame and this is what it is on the 100. So it's a big deal to challenge that number and to say why that number, you know, it is correct on a 100-year, but that's not the policy. That's not the time frame we should be looking at. And so you would have to, like, remultiply everything that the government does. It's why it's hard to change. It's why Tony and Bob have been challenged and vilified by a lot of people. But I really do encourage you to talk to them about it. I mean, I'm just, you know, I know this much, but you really should talk to them. I think it's important that you go through this, and if you can raise these questions to them, I think that's, you know, that will be time well spent, and I'd love to hear what you hear back.
Yeah, Martha, I should say that I have both the 25-year and the 100-year on this. The 25-year comes to the same conclusion.
All right. I think...
Okay. I just want you to know that.
But the issue is you're using the EPA and the EIA, and those use numbers based
on... No, I know, but I converted them. I figured out how to convert a 100-year thing into a 25-year thing. Okay? That was another article I looked up, as to how to make that conversion.
Okay, I'm really not the one to talk to about it. Will?
Thank you, Martha. I want to go back to what Dooley mentioned, which was this meeting that was held of the PRI about the proposed model development on the property that we own and are proposing to sell for a new development that would have many, many very admirable features. I was there, as was Pam and Dooley. I don't know if anybody else was there, but I thought they did a phenomenal job. Ed made a presentation, and Better Housing of Tompkins County talked, and the developer. And really, I think, made a compelling case why this is a very, very innovative project. But there were also many, many people there that were very critical of what is being proposed, about the impact on traffic, on the process, why we're not the community asked what they want. And that whole discussion has continued to an amazing degree on a listserv that I get, which is Ithaca West, and asking a lot of very basic questions about what the county does, what TCAT does, why do we have these gigantic buses that are polluting and degrading the streets, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, I would encourage anybody who wants to understand the situation to go to this next meeting on the 10th at PRI, and was it at 6:30, and be prepared to listen and speak about it. It was sort of democracy at its very basic level, and I find it quite interesting.
Thank you, Will. Anyone else?
Wait, can I just ask Ed or Will or somebody who was there how many people came out to the meeting and how many more you're expecting at the next meeting?
There were 25 to 30 at the meeting.
There were 25 to 30, yeah. For the microphone. Okay. Pam.
Yeah, the people were saying that there really wasn't, they felt there wasn't enough notice before the meeting. And, I mean, that's something we might think about in the future. I think it was... I don't know, Marcia could tell us about that, but if, and I put it out on the listserv, but that was even, in a shorter time frame. So this is that's why they wanted to have another one, because they felt there were a number of people who were interested in being part of it and understanding it, but that were unable to come because of they felt they had already scheduled something.
Yeah, as had I. So thank you for the information.
Anyone else? Thank you all. We have a presentation. While Ed comes up, I'm going to quickly make my report in case anybody's listening in real time, and because Mr. Kukas is in the back, we'll go through the consent agenda. The Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council is holding a workshop right now. If you're watching on June 18th at 6:15, the workshop is at 6 o'clock. Started at 6 o'clock at the Holiday Inn. About how to apply for regional council grants in this coming cycle, for the 2013 cycle. The deadline for applications is August 12th. So this is not the only workshop. It's happening right now at the Holiday Inn. But on Thursday, June 20th, at Corning Community College, starting at 6 p.m., is another workshop. And on June 25th and June 27th, there are workshops in Vestal and Norwich as well. So anybody can call, let me see if I get the number right, 721-8605, I think, is the number, 607-721-8605, to get information on the workshop locations, and or Google, regional councils and look for Southern Tier. The information on these workshops is available there. So I do encourage the public to check out the workshops and check out the application criteria and apply. We got a lot of terrific resources into the Southern Tier this past year, and we can hope for more. And so Ed's presentation is part of that. Right, and I have a couple of appointments, one on as a chair's appointment to the Civil War Commission, Gwen Sequest. I think that's spelled wrong. Mike, what's her name spelled? S-E-A-Q-U?
S-E-A-Q-U-I-S-T.
Okay, Sequist. Okay, that's my appointment. And then I'll ask for the consent agenda. The only thing we have are appointments as follows. Fish and Wildlife Management Board, Lynn Szabo. Environmental Management Council, Margaret Solstein. Tompkins Cortland Community College Board, Arthur Kukas. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Pam McAsey. And Public Safety did take these actions, I assume. Emergency Communications Review and Oversight Committee, Mark Conrad, and the Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, Peter Stein. Do I have a motion on those items? Jim moves, Pam seconds, Pat seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Those are approved. Thank you, Art. You're more than welcome to stay, in case you were just here for that.
The whole issue of public education for universities and secondary education is something which has concerned me for years, and I think, nationally we're getting the whole thing kind of upside down. And being part of TC3 is, I think, terrific, and I hope I can have some impact of my views on these things. That's also, thank you for considering me and putting my name forward.
Thank you so much for your service and for your many contributions to the community. Mm. Carol?
Oh, well, that's what I was raising my hand to say as well, just to take this opportunity, since you bothered to come down and actually address us, to thank you for all of the service that you've given to this community. And we're so pleased that you're willing to serve again in another capacity on this board.
Yeah. It's something new for me, but I hope I can make some impact on that. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And if you want to come over here on the side. And Art, if you want to come over on the side so you can see the presentation, you're welcome to move up here. So with that, Ed Marks, Commissioner of Planning and Community Sustainability. Hello. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Martha. Thank you all for having me here for this brief presentation. I'll try to keep it brief. As I think most of you know, over the last year and a half. We've been involved in this planning effort with our fellow neighbor counties in the southern tier that are shown up on the screen there, running from Delaware to Steuben and north as far as Shenango and Tompkins, to prepare this Cleaner, Greener Southern Tier sustainability plan that's funded through the Cleaner, Greener New York program, funding from coming through NYSERDA. Tompkins County, along with Southern Tier East Regional Planning and Development Board and Southern Tier Central Regional Planning Board, together developed this plan along with our consultant from ICF. And the plan has been completed. It's been endorsed by the Regional Economic Development Council, which was like the last step for its acceptance. And now we're going into what's phase two, which is the implementation phase, which is $90 million, probably over 3 years. The first phase is $30 million in this year. Competitive statewide funding to help implement some of the ideas in these plans. The plan's available on the website, cleanergreenersouthern-tier.org. You can go there and see the entire plan. The plan identified some regional assets, particularly manufacturing was identified as really key to this regional economy. Although there's been significant decline in manufacturing over the last couple of decades, there's still a higher percentage of the workforce in manufacturing in the southern tier than in any other region in New York State. It's 11% of the workforce, so 38,000 people employed in manufacturing, and that is different from any other region in the state. Our forest resource is another one that we often don't think all that much about, except that we like to see the trees in the fall when they're changing color. But there's 2.6 million acres of forested land in the southern tier region, and 95% of that is in private ownership. So it's not like the Adirondacks where there's a good chunk of public land. This is largely privately owned land. Also, wood is a major fuel source for people for household heating. 7% of the total households in the southern tier use wood for heat as a primary source of heat, and that's the highest percentage in New York State. We have several efforts along energy already well underway in the region. Wind has taken hold, particularly in Steuben County, as a major resource, and there are several other wind projects in development. There's also quite a bit of combined heat and power deployed within the region in a lot of different settings, including the largest one being at Cornell. A few of the highlights, looking at the farm economy, there's quite a bit of emphasis on rural development, particularly around value-added products, biomass, food production for local markets, and culinary and agritourism as opportunities for the farm economy. And we're hoping to increase farm sales from $338 million to $497 million over the 20-year time horizon of the plan. Renewables and energy conservation are a big emphasis of the plan. Again, a big driving force of this plan is greenhouse gas emission reduction. That's NYSERDA's overriding interest. And there's quite a bit of opportunity, we believe. It's just starting to happen. A lot more to come. And reinvesting in our cities and villages is also a theme that's all the region embraced in terms of revitalizing those traditional population centers can be good for our economy, provide housing opportunities, particularly for seniors and young people that are both going to be in greater need of housing in the future, we believe, and also provide opportunities to live more efficiently with use of transit and alternative transportation modes. So the plan suggests 65 priority actions that can be taken to make the region more sustainable. And undertaking those actions would reduce greenhouse gas emissions 32% within 20 years just based on these local actions. If there are additional federal or state actions, that would increase that. There's 22 key priorities that we think are really ready for implementation in the next few years. And there's also additional 77 actions that were identified that we think will be necessary to meet the goal, overall goal of 80% reduction in emissions by 2050. Some of these things we weren't able to really calculate job creation for, but for the ones that we were, The actions on the plan would generate an estimated 414 new jobs per year average over the 20-year period for which we analyzed this. So looking at the top 22, we looked at different segments of the economy, looking at energy efficiency, renewables, and our energy roadmap. We came up with a few real key ones, we thought. Energy efficiency is always the first priority. It's the easiest way to reduce energy use and emissions, and there's a lot of opportunity in a region with a lot of older buildings. So that's a key area. And also, implementing renewable energy, such as PV, solar PV, solar hot water, in residential and commercial buildings is also a real great opportunity that the county's obviously taking care advantage of here. Developing a regional energy roadmap, trying to look into the future and determine what's a likely scenario for our energy future so that we can be taking actions now that are leading toward that future rather than going down what might be dead-end streets on something that's not going to pan out in the long term. Again, this is something that we've begun to undertake here in Tompkins County, and that was adopted by the region as a goal for the entire region. And then looking at creative financing options to make it easier for people to deploy renewable energy and undertake energy efficiency initiatives. Also looking at energy, deploying more solar PV and solar thermal, facilitating that. The effort going on now in a few towns in Tompkins County is a good example, the Solarize effort. What Tompkins County, we've done in the county government is another good example. There's many more opportunities to deploy solar in a cost-effective way. Facilitating use of biomass. I mentioned there's already a lot of use of wood for heat. There's an opportunity to really expand that dramatically, utilizing the existing forest resource. In fact, a lot of the biomass that's standing on our forests actually should be removed for good forest management, but there's not enough market right now for it, and so it ends up standing there and actually interfering with other species growth in the forests. And we've been told that by DC foresters. And facilitating use of combined heat and power in development projects, private and public. Also, a key area of the plan is looking at transportation, improving connectivity of transit and pedestrian and other alternative transportation methods, especially in downtowns and around schools and other areas of high traffic, was identified as a key. So you have more of a seamless system where people can easily transfer from one mode to other and get to where they need to go. Looking at opportunities for intercity bus service. We're a pretty large region, spread out. Communities are quite a distance from one another. People are largely dependent on private automobiles because there aren't that many options, but there does seem to be an interest, at least, in more intercity within the region bus service. And expanding, again, a model developed here, way to go, opportunities for people to learn easily about what the options are for taking any particular trip and have that be easy to access. Other transportation options, adoption of green fleet policies, which again we have done publicly, but trying to see more public entities and private entities even looking at private fleets and how to green those fleets. Creating infrastructure for adoption of electric vehicles region-wide so that we have people can't really purchase a vehicle if there's not the infrastructure for charging and being able to use that vehicle effectively. So that was identified as a key, and it's one that NYSERDA is pushing as well. In the areas of land use, encouraging development and investments in our cities, villages, and hamlets, again, the traditional population centers, really play well when you're trying to think about energy use and greenhouse gas emissions. They're easier to connect by transit. They, by virtue of their compact development scale, often use less energy per capita, and also the pedestrian and bicycle use is a lot easier. And updating local land use regulations to help implement projects, particularly in those cities, villages, and hamlets where the existing codes don't always facilitate the kind of development people are saying they want to see. On the housing side, again, providing assistance and financial assistance to provide housing for low to moderate income households. There's still a large demand in the region for housing, quality housing for folks in low to moderate incomes, and also technical assistance and financing for new and rehabilitated energy-efficient affordable housing. It doesn't do a lot of good for someone to live in a low-rent house if the energy bills are $400 or $500 a month, which remarkably is sometimes the case in the wintertime. In the economy, some of the highlights were building on the Regional Economic Development Council. This was something I identified there, which we also adopted in this plan, was looking at developing the workforce to help undertake all these energy initiatives in terms of jobs and rehabilitating buildings and installing renewable energy systems, and also certifying contractors so that they can actually be eligible to use the incentives from NYSERDA. You have to be a certified contractor to be a participant in those programs. And also another aspect of the economic side was the idea I mentioned earlier about the agricultural and rural economy, that providing opportunities for value-added products in the agricultural sector. And again, a leader, Challenge Industries is a leader here with the food hub that they're developing in Groton to allow farmers to get better access to markets for their products. In the forestry and working lands area, we talk about developing a regional program to promote sustainable forestry and wood products. There's a lot of opportunity there. There's a lot of wood products industry in the region that is underappreciated. But in the long term, we can perhaps do even better if we have sustainably certified forest and forest product producers. In areas of adaptation, hazards and mitigation plans, of course, this area has been hit really hard in recent years by flooding. Unfortunately, the expectation is that will become more common, not less, in the future based on climate change projections. And so incorporating those anticipated impacts into hazard mitigation plan updates as counties in the region update theirs. We're updating our hazard mitigation plan in Tompkins County right now and putting adaptation strategies into it as we do. Water treatment plants, both wastewater treatment and water treatment for domestic use, are high energy users in the public sector. And so there's a lot of opportunity to undertake measures at those plants that will dramatically reduce the energy use. Again, the Ithaca area wastewater treatment plant is a leader in this right now. They've been doing a lot of work there and dramatically reducing their energy, net energy use and emissions as a result. And in the area of solid waste, this is sounding a lot like Tompkins County, and I'm very proud to say that we're in good shape on a lot of these things, but the pay-as-you-throw system that we have here, not every county or community has that. It's shown to really be effective in helping to reduce the amount of waste going to landfills, and so the regional plan calls for expanding pay-as-you-throw throughout the region as much as possible. So, again, the plan's focus was particularly on energy and greenhouse gas emissions, although we looked at a lot of other sectors. Just to get an idea what the southern tier greenhouse gas emissions, where they come from, on the right-hand side, you see residential, commercial, industrial. Those are largely energy use in buildings. You see that about 47% of the energy use in the region comes in those building-related energy uses, and transportation is 37%. And then you see the other sectors that play a lesser role. So much of the emphasis is in building energy use and transportation energy use in the plan. Also, we have energy use by county. It's largely related to population. Although when you look at per capita basis, you'll see that Tompkins County has lower per capita than most of the counties. Schuyler has a pretty high per capita. One interesting thing we found is some of the most rural counties, when you account for sequestration of carbon in growing forests, they actually have a net negative emissions. Shenango, Delaware, and Schuyler counties actually have more carbon being sequestered in forest growth based on the calculations than they actually emit from other sources, which is kind of an interesting...
Which ones?
Shenango, Delaware, and Schuyler. Based on your estimates. In terms of looking at the renewable energy future, again, mentioned earlier, this is an indication of the wind resource in the region. Those shaded areas in the pink or the darker, almost maroon color, are the best places based on average wind speeds. We have, again, three major existing wind installations in Steuben County with several more planned. Of course, we know Black Oak is planned here in Tompkins. There's plans in Schuyler and Delaware County also for new wind farms. And there's a lot of potential still within the region, it appears, for that. Again, as I mentioned earlier, when you look at what fuel sources we use, the thing that stands out, we're pretty typical, except when you look at wood, where there's a pretty high percentage use in the southern tier compared to the state or the United States. PV systems, solar, still pretty minor in terms of its capacity right now, but it's growing dramatically. As of the time, as of 2012, there were 526 PV systems in the region. 50% of those were in Tompkins County. So an 8-county region, 50% of the PV is in Tompkins, and that's probably going to grow in the near term, but we hope in the long term that won't be the case, because if it's just happening here, it's not going to be addressing the opportunity. There's also a few dams in the region, not in our county, but that have been identified with potential for hydro that don't have hydro on them now. And whether that will happen in the near term, we don't know, but long term, there is a lot of interest in using whatever hydro resource is available. And combined heat and power I mentioned before, there are plants in several of the counties in the region. The largest one at Cornell, which is about 75% of the total capacity in the region, but there are plants at different scales throughout the region. In addition to the 22, priority actions, I just thought I'd highlight the other energy actions. One was to assess performance in government facilities. Again, we've done a lot of that in doing upgrades, but not all governments have. Study and facilitate mid-scale wind projects. The large-scale, industrial-scale wind has pretty rigid requirements as to where it'll work, but we believe there's another type of wind turbines, not quite so big, not the small residential scale, but that might be appropriate for an individual business or a farm operation to install and could be quite cost-effective. But has been done a few places, but not that many yet. Deployment of anaerobic digester systems, again, largely on farms, but also in wastewater treatment plants. There's a great opportunity to use a waste resource and turn it into an energy resource through digester systems. Facilitating deployment of geothermal. Geothermal has some very specific requirements, but it has a lot of applicability in the right situation. And then looking at transitioning existing power and thermal facilities to more sustainable fuel, if we can find the right way to do that. Again, the plans greenhouse gas reductions, this is where they would come from. A larger percentage would actually come from the sustainable management of working lands. Renewable energy is next, and then efficiency and transportation improvements would be the next most in the next 20 years. This is on a 20-year horizon. And for each action in the plan that has a greenhouse gas emission reduction component, we've actually been able to calculate how many metric tons we would be able to reduce if we undertook the action as described in the plan. So that's the plan. Next steps are to apply for Phase 2 funding. We've been talking with a lot of people in the region and in the county about that. And the Regional Economic Development Council is actually going to form a working group around the Cleaner Greener program that we'll be participating in. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ed. A lot to digest there. And even more, I know I've looked through the website, and there's a tremendous amount of great information there. Any questions? Mike?
Congratulations to our planning department on this effort, real leadership here, looking at this in the whole area. We talked about the wind issues, and you showed us the map of the various places could be used. Keep an eye on Cortland County, where out in the town of Solon, they actually solicited a developer to look at putting in wind turbines out there and met tremendous public opposition all of a sudden. I don't know whether that's going to happen or not out there. So you got to think about those areas and what kind of reaction you're going to get. Similar to when Cornell suggested putting some turbines up on Mount Pleasant, and the folks up there were not thrilled by that idea.
Yeah, you have to approach that right. They had some bad experiences in Steuben County. I think they've learned from those. But I think the Black Oak Farm is one that's really worked slowly through the process with the neighbors and the town and had a better result. So it is important that it be approached the right way. And it won't work everywhere.
Nathan?
Two questions. The first is that the pay-as-you-throw program, what other communities have that?
There's three or four others in the region. Okay. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head which ones there are, but there are a few others that do. But it's not uniform or probably not the majority.
And how much did that reduce our waste when we moved to a system like that?
That's a good question. I don't know the actual result. I think it's, I think it was done in combination with other things.
Right.
But there has been studies done that have shown that though you get a better result when you combine other programs with a pay-as-you-throw system.
Yeah. Okay. And then the second thing is that it says that the plan says that it would create, 422 job FTEs?
414 or something
414.
Like that.
So, and how long-term are those positions?
Well, that's an average over 20 years. So, 400 per year. Some of the jobs in construction for certain things might be shorter-lived, but in those years you'd have even more of those jobs per year. So it's an average.
I see. Okay. Thanks.
An average per year.
Per year.
Over the 20 years. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your work and the whole department's work on this.
Frank and then Peter.
Thanks, Martha. Ed, can you say again where the whole plan can be viewed?
Yeah, it's www.cleanergreenersouthern-tier, just all run together as one word, .org. Cleanergreenersouthern-tier.
Okay. The will that contain a piece that talks about governance of the effort? Because this is quite an effort.
It does have a section on governance. Unfortunately, I guess I would say unfortunately, we don't have a region that's had a regional planning agency that's served the entire region for a long time like some of the regions around the state do, or that have had this kind of working arrangement amongst counties for a long time. We have two regional planning agencies. Southern Tier East includes counties from Tioga to the east, and then has two or three additional counties that aren't in our region. And then Southern Tier Central is Steuben, Schuyler, and Chemung. We're not in either at the present time. And so we don't have a clear organization to drive this. The Regional Economic Development Council is apparently getting instruction from Albany to take this and make it part of their program. And also there was a consortium of representatives from all the counties, the universities, the major cities, in some of the towns that came together throughout this planning process, and they have agreed to continue to meet a couple times a year to help move it forward.
I have to ask you the inevitable question, Ed. There's a lot of implication about land use. Without using this, emphasizing the Z word too much, what the land use control aspect of it, can you say anything? I realize it's very preliminary, but in order to accomplish some of these, forestry, agriculture, I was looking at that chart, pie chart that you had up that showed most of the emissions occur in open space.
Reductions.
Where will the concentration and...
That side of it is not so much a land use or zoning issue as it is encouraging continued work with farms and forest management entities to engage in sustainable practices, which many are doing now.
They're doing, yeah.
But continuing that effort and expanding it. So that would be more along those lines. In terms of the land use things, it's really a lot of the focus of the plan is on the cities, villages, you know, making sure that they have in place the kind of rules that would allow them to take advantage of the opportunities that exist there. But yeah, there was a strong agreement amongst the consortium of all the counties that it should be a land use component about updating people's, you know, regulations and plans. So we weren't the ones that put that into the plan.
Are you gonna stick around for the 20 years to see that this?
Well, I hope I might stick around somewhere. I don't know if I'll be in this job.
Thank you.
Peter and then Pam.
Just for the record, I intend not to see the end of it. I have two questions. One is short. What in the world is what a pay as you throw? What does that mean?
It basically means that you pay based on the volume or weight of the trash, as opposed to having just an annual fee and you can throw as much as you want.
Okay. The other question is longer. I don't quite. I mean, isn't this mean a lot of decisions by all the individuals that live? It's the governments can't make these decisions, right?
Well,
I mean, or can they? Are these things all can be done by governments?
No, not all of them by any means. Some can, many cannot. But what you can do is make it easier. In some cases, government can help to make it easier for people that may be inclined to make a decision to make it. In terms of what we mentioned, things like financing, or didn't mention this here, but there's an emphasis also on taking out regulatory barriers to putting in renewable energy. Those kinds of things are the things government can do.
What's the biggest one? If you could make just one change, okay, which one would it be?
I think the biggest change would be to make every building as energy efficient as you can, and it's economical. It will pay for itself, but just having people make the economically rational decisions to improve the efficiency of their buildings, whether they be businesses or homeowners, would be the single biggest thing you could do in a short period of time.
And is there good evidence that a government has actually can make enough incentives to make that happen?
I don't think there's anybody that's gotten to where they'd like to get to with that yet.
Okay, thank you.
Pam.
Well, I would just like to point out that land use does enter into issues like siting windmills. That one of the reasons that there have been real problems with the windmill site in Cohocton and Steuben County, because there was no land use, there was not, and that the siting of the windmills have created, I guess they're not called windmills anymore, has created real problems. And so if you had an outside developer coming in, making the decisions on where to site things, and if you have no land use plan or program or any zoning to help guide that, that you can create as a negative a situation or a negative situation, which otherwise would be a very positive situation. So it's, land use does have an impact on a lot of different things.
Sure does.
I was wondering, Ed, it sort of goes to the governance question and sort of who can do this. I mean, anybody can go to the website and say, gee, that looks like a great idea, and either I'm going to make that part of my business model, or I'm going to apply for a consolidated funding app, you know, a regional council grant to do that. And say, for example, if you said, I think there's a tremendous potential in insulating houses, so I'm going to put in a consolidated funding application to get the startup of capital that I need to start that business, an applicant can point to this plan, and that would be a very strong application. It would seem that, you know, so this can be this plan is out there. It can be used by everybody in the Southern Tier who might be looking for these kinds of opportunities.
Yes, and for the people that aren't at the meeting at the Holiday Inn tonight, there are three opportunities. You know, one is for capital investments. So a lot of that is for the private sector. Can be public sector, but there's a lot of private sector opportunity. But there's also money in this program for local comprehensive planning that embeds these principles in their local plans and makes their local zoning more effective. And also there's an incentive to streamlined permitting for solar PV systems, small-scale solar PV systems, and electrical vehicle charging stations. Communities can get between $2,500 and $5,000 simply for adopting a simple procedure to streamline those permitting processes.
Wait, they can get that money?
They would get that money if they adopt NYSERDA's model permitting form for solar PV and by resolution or local law and submit that to NYSERDA. They're eligible to get between $2,500 and $5,000 from NYSERDA as an incentive for doing that.
Okay, great. And have you looked at, I know every region was supposed to do a plan like this. I'm sure you've got lots of spare time on your hands, but have you looked at any of the other plans?
Not closely, looked at some of the drafts. Most of them are just getting finalized, and we're supposed to be getting press releases about that this week. Some of them are up on websites, some aren't yet. I know they're all a little, you know, they have some commonalities, certainly, because NYSERDA had certain common elements they wanted to know them, but they all, I think, respect and reflect the character of the area that they're dealing with.
It'd be interesting to hear, what the differences are.
Yeah, absolutely. Lines.
Thank you. Pat?
I just wasn't quite clear, Ed. The funding that's available, is that to be applied for through the REDC process?
It's through the combined funding application process.
So it's
there is
the CFA.
Separate funding, yes, separate funding for this Cleaner, Greener program. There's $25 million statewide for capital type of investment projects. There's $4 million for local planning, and then there's $1 million for these incentives for streamlining your permitting process.
So there's separate funding, but it still goes through the same
process. Right,
there's
still need to go through and be reviewed by the Regional Economic Development Council.
Okay, thank you.
And is there anything in particular that Tompkins County is applying for?
Not that I could say right at the moment for sure. We're looking at a lot of things, talking with a lot of people to see what might be possible. But we don't have anything definite at this point.
Okay, great. Jim?
Ed, are there any thoughts about incentivizing developers that put up buildings that are truly energy efficient buildings in new construction?
Barbara Lifton just introduced a bill
like
to do exactly that at the state level through an income tax credit for people that purchase highly efficient buildings or renovate buildings to their high efficiency. So that's one area that the state certainly could do something, and it's actually just was adopted that exact law was adopted in Colorado recently. In terms of local, we have a lot of constraints as to what we can and can't do. The best thing we can do is make it easy for people to do it and maybe work on providing some kind of financing assistance that's easier to access.
Thank you.
Pat?
When you say for comprehensive planning, would that include planning by local municipalities?
Yes.
Is that what that's about?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So they could apply for funding to help with their planning.
So, Ed, what related to some of this, the PACE program that we haven't heard about for a couple of years, I mean, this was a program that would have incentivized, help make it possible for people to retrofit their homes. Where, if you would explain that briefly, and where does that stand at the federal level?
It's called Property Assessed Clean Energy, where a local municipality will essentially, it's like on-bill financing, except it's on your tax bill instead of on your energy bill.
Mm-hmm.
Where you get it financed in a way that you can pay it back through a regular billing process. It's not possible to do with most residential housing right now because the federal housing agencies have said they will not guarantee loans that have PACE program funding associated with them. But it is eligible for commercial buildings, and in Westchester County, they've established a commercial PACE program that they're actually opening up or willing to partner with other counties on and expand it beyond Westchester. So that's an area we may have some conversations with them about that in the future. I know some folks down in Broome County are interested in that, too.
Okay. Carol.
Ed, you guys have done the most incredible job on this, so I couldn't be prouder to be part of a county that was chosen to lead this study for our region.
It has been a team effort from the region, but believe me, the staff and the planning department really went the extra mile on this one.
Right, and the staff. Now I don't remember my question. So this plan lays out many new directions, some that aren't new to us, that would be new other places, and vice versa. Did this group get into any discussion of some of the state tweaks that could be made to the state level policy that would make some of this more doable on a local level? For example, one that comes to my mind would be the net metering, this whole issue that you can't right now under New York State policies get together with neighbors and together build a solar panels right. in a location that would work for the group of neighbors that's considered going into the power business.
Some of those things certainly
like
came up, but we were clearly instructed by NYSERDA not to include in the plan any recommendations for change in state policy, that this was to be based on what you can do locally. So we have the opportunity to independently give them that feedback, and I suppose at some point we will, and that those are the kind of things. There are a lot of, there are certainly things that could be done, including the funding that they came out with being all capital money as opposed to money that would allow you to develop programs is one thing that's already come up that's of some concern.
Okay, and then the only, Martha, if before Ed leaves, if we can get back to the resolution about this rather than waiting till later in the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Anybody else? Great. Well, thank you, Ed. This really is, it's a real repository of so much information, so much knowledge that people can use, and I do encourage mm-hmm. people.
Yeah, one thing I didn't mention, we were able to get from NYSEG through this process energy usage data by municipality. So it's available total community-wide energy use data, which we hope we'll be able to get to in the future to be able to use to monitor how things are changing over time. That's not a guarantee, but it's a hope.
That's great. Terrific. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate it. Well, I think I pretty much did go through what I had as a report, so I'd like to go to County Administrator report, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Martha. I think I'll be fairly brief tonight. Just a couple of updates. The Human Rights Search Committee is continuing to meet. There are interviews tomorrow and Friday for candidates for the Human Rights Director position, and finalist interview will be next Monday, so they're moving right along in that process. Mortgage recording tax, I've been checking in over the last couple of days, including over the last few minutes, to see what's going on. We're getting very positive, strong messages from the Assembly that they expect to pass it on their side. It's awfully quiet on the Senate side. We've reached out to Senator O'Meara's office to find out what's going on. Again, it's just very quiet right now. I will tell you that the other thing that has to happen on the home rule front in both houses is the extension, the fairly routine extension of the 1% sales tax. The mortgage tax is in the same line in terms of the same, it's in the same step of the process right now as that routine renewal of the 1% sales tax. That's a pretty good place to be. So it hasn't been rejected at this point. It's in the right line. The question is whether it will make it through the door or not. Adjournment is, I believe, Thursday. So my sense is if we're going to see any action on the mortgage tax, it will probably be tomorrow. So stay tuned on that. Paula wanted me to let you know that she's participating in a broadband summit in Albany on Thursday, sponsored by New York State. She's on a panel that's going to be moderated by Steve Aquario, talking about what local governments can do, and we'll certainly talk about what Pat and the broadband committee have done locally. Living Wage Group had its eighth meeting in the six-meeting series last week.
Woo-hoo!
And we're still going. Some pretty interesting new ideas came out of that discussion. important that it happen there. It's going to take a little time to work through some of the things that came up at the last meeting. My guess is we're going to go another two meetings, I think, before we can finish things up and prepare a set of recommendations for the legislature. In the original charge, we gave ourselves until the end of July to report out. We thought that was giving ourselves plenty of time. I think we'll still make the deadline, but it's going to be a little closer than we thought. Interesting exercise in public policy. On the policy front, just a real quick update. There are a couple making their way through the process right now. They've been through one committee, fund balance policy is moving through committees right now, which would establish a 10% fund balance policy. Frank Proto, you'll be pleased to know that the management comp time policy is making its way through committees, will be to the full legislature, I think, at your next meeting. Diversity policy has been distributed. Leslin came to the department head meeting last week to kick off the policy review process for the diversity policy. Responses to that, and it's being broadly critiqued. Responses to that are due back on July 12th. I think that's my report.
Thank you very much, Joe. Any questions? Carol?
Yeah, do you have any dates for the further meetings of that committee?
We're on the meeting wizard front right now, so no, but we'll, as soon as we know. If you'd like to be notified, I can send a notice to all the legislators, if you'd like to be advised that. Sure.
All right. Thank you very much, Joe. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Other than a personnel matter for executive session, I have no report.
Okay. Thank you. Finance Director Rick Snyder. Sure.
This is my first report, so I'll see how I do tonight. But the most important thing, I think, was I went to my first Tobacco Corporation meeting today. And I don't know a whole lot about that, but I am now a member of that board and an officer and pleased to serve in any function that I can. But that met right before our legislative meeting this evening, so that's just another duty that I'll have to become familiar with. But what I placed on your desk before the meeting you can turn to is our monthly sales tax report, and I just wanted to make a few brief comments on that to highlight it. We're comparing the month of May's figures from 2012 to 2013, and if you compare the month of May to last year's month of May, it's a 4.72% increase in the total sales receipts. And all the way on the right-hand side of the spreadsheet, it shows year-to-date information. The year-to-date information is total sales tax receipts is about $500,000 more, and that comes to a 2.5% increase. So I think the key figure to remember is that we're right about on track. That's a good thing at about 2.5% for sales tax increase. The other thing I like to mention is that we do have an auction next Monday night. If you know people that are interested in coming to the, I'm sorry, did I say city? I meant county, the county auction. We have 21 properties that are for sale for taxes. It's Monday night on June 24th. At 7 p.m. Last night we had the auction preview. There were about 64 interested people that showed up, and they asked very good questions. And for those of you who have not been to an auction of this type, it's very interesting, and we'd ask you to just generate as much interest as you can, because this is one way that the county can redeem a lot of properties and make some money. Like I said, there's 21 properties that are listed for sale. There may be one or two that are redeemed within the next day or so. But that, once again, is next Monday night, June 24th at 7 o'clock p.m.
Where is that?
That's in the health department building or the health services?
Is it the health or is it in the human services building?
The one we met at last night was the...
Was it downtown or was it off-site? Downtown. It's in the Human Services building. Usually it's in the Livesey conference room.
Yes, that's exactly where it's at. Sorry for not knowing my way around town. And the last thing I'd like to mention was, although we gave it the best shot that we could, Moody's came back with their bond rating for us for this summer's bond issue. Joe and myself and David and others on staff had a conference call with Moody's a week ago Monday, and they were supposed to come back to us for requesting of more data. We tried to get the bond rating increased to a better rating, but they did not come back to us last Friday as promised with a request for more information. They just showed us Monday morning their article that expressed that our bond rating stayed the same. It's a very good rating. It's a bond rating of AA1 or AA1 stable. And we asked a few follow-up questions, whether there was anything that we could do to change it. We brought to the attention that the legislative board was indeed moving forward, increasing the fund balance requirement up from 5% to 10%. We also told them about plan development in the community. I forget how many millions of dollars. $250
million
worth of plan development. It really didn't have any effect. They pretty much had their mind made up, and they issued the report. So as we go forward into the bond sale, we still have a very good, highly reputable bond rating of AA1 stable. And unless you have questions for me tonight, that concludes my report. Ryan.
Rick, is there a list somewhere of the subject properties for auction?
I happen to have one with me tonight, and there is a more detailed list I can give you out of the finance office after the meeting or tomorrow. And it's also on the website, if I could think of the company's name. Maybe I have it here. You can go online and click on it, and it shows the detail of all the properties. It is, yeah, I do have it. Reynolds Auction. It's www.reynoldsauction.com. And as you bring that up, the first ad or first promotion that they have is for our auction next Monday night. But you can look at all 21 properties on that website.
Frank and then Jim.
Rick, good report.
Thank you.
And nice try on the bond rating, by the way. The 21 properties, I if you're going to send out a hard copy, I'd like one. But can you say how many properties were pulled off? I know there was some discussion about some of the properties being withdrawn because there was some interest with regard to the some towns or the county or whatever.
We started with, I think, 33 or 34 properties. Within the last 6 weeks or so, that got whittled down to 21 as a result of those who came in for redemption and who paid their taxes. And then there were some other properties that we removed or exempted from auction action, even though we may go ahead and foreclose. And that was at another committee meeting that we had, and we did pull some properties from the auction because they had other foreseeable uses. I don't remember that number.
Is it possible?
It was a very small number, Frank. We're thinking
two or three.
Yeah, we're thinking two or three, and some of those may have been redeemed too.
Well,
so you're talking about the ones that were pulled by policy, right? By choice that you pulled them.
Yeah, not the ones that were redeemed.
Yeah.
But if it's possible to share, a copy of which ones were pulled for other reasons, by policy or interest by a town to purchase, if it's possible, I'd appreciate seeing a copy of that list. Thank you as well.
Jim?
A number I would like is over the last 4 years, and I certainly don't need it now, but over the last 4 years, how many properties have gone to auction at this time over the last 4 years?
Can you get that for you?
Thank you.
Karen? Carol?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if any of the properties ended up being pulled, if we followed up at all in terms of working with the affordable housing agencies, any of them. And then I also wanted to
compliment you. I, for one, really appreciate receiving the sales tax distribution summary report in font big enough to read. So I really, this month we can read it, so I enjoy
that. Might have been a mistake. You're used to getting them much more.
All right. Thank you very much, Rick.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Pat? Okay.
Yes, I would like to move the addition of Resolution D, which is in your red packet, I believe, or maybe it came with your packet, I'm not sure which, but you have it. It's authorizing a second public hearing on proposed local law number A of 2013, amending Chapter 32, Code of Ethics, and I so move.
Seconded by Dooley, and that requires 10 votes to be added to the agenda. All in favor, please raise your hand. And please keep your hands up. Opposed? That passes 10 to 2. So that is on the agenda. Thank you. All right, let me... Let us go to Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee so that, well, I'm sorry. I guess we've got Peter Stein. We've got Jeff here for Facilities. So we'll go in order with as far as that goes. So Peter Stein, Chair of Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Your report?
Well, my report is Resolution Number A, ID 4220, Award of Bid, CR 109, Henshaw Road Reconstruction Project, PIN 3753.25, Town of Ithaca, pending committee action. The committee did vote and sent this to the legislature.
In our folders, there's the revised version as adopted by the committee?
Yes.
That's the one?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second? Seconded by Dave. Discussion? We'll go around. Mike, Jim, Kathy Lewis, Frank.
Peter, I certainly support this project, and I want to see it go forward. I'm wondering about what the final resolve is saying to us about the possible green shoulders. I believe the bid came in quite high for the to do it with aggregate. Is this saying that we're going to do painting of the shoulders, or we're going to look at painting of the shoulders, or what does this say?
It simply says we're going to look to see what we can do. It's clear the bids are very high. We don't have the money to do that. I don't think anyone is proposing that we use county money to put those shoulders in. But we do have some money left over in the project, and we're asking the Highway Department to just look at it and evaluate what we possibly could do. That's my understanding of it.
Okay. I just want to say that based on the public hearing or the public meeting that we had out in Ellis Hollow, I would be reluctant to see us do the painting.
That's interesting. I was at the same meeting, and almost everybody was in favor of it.
I don't agree.
Well, of the people who spoke, almost everybody was in favor of it. That doesn't mean you evaluate it the same way. But Jim, Kathy, Frank, Carol, Brian.
Yes. Mike asked an interesting question, but what I'm going to do is move to remove that final resolve, and I would like to move that at this time.
Second by Frank. Discussion, go ahead.
Okay. All of you remember this project as being one that came down the pike, and we were all very thrilled about it, and it almost went away. And it had to be resurrected out of, you know, the burning ashes, and the program came back. We do now have the promise of money and the ability to finally move on this project. I attended the F&I meeting the other day, heard a lot of discussion about color painting, different kinds of aggregate on the side, and I came away from there with the feeling that a lot of anecdotal evidence about who wants it and who doesn't want it, and things like that. And it made sense to me that I would like, the reason I propose this is to kind of put to rest this idea of painted shoulders and greenways on the side of the road, because I didn't hear clear evidence that said it slowed traffic down or any such thing. And we may have that kind of evidence available and talk about it at a later time, but I would that's why I put this forward to be taken off. I would just like to do the project the way we originally planned it.
I've got a lot of people. Carol, Frank, Peter, Dooley, but if I could ask Jeff.
I'm on there.
Well, we're now on the an amendment, so.
I didn't put my hand up in time.
You were in the line for the main motion. Do you want to speak to the amendment?
Sure.
Okay. Well, let me put Kathy, Carol, Frank, but first.
And me. I want to speak on
that. All right. Kathy, Carol, Frank, Peter, Dooley, but first. Jeff, could you describe what your understanding of that resolved is and what you would do and what the contractor will do and not do and whether that will hold up the project in any way, et cetera? So,
I'll try, Martha. I don't have that version of the resolution in front of me to read it. It was discussed quite a bit at the meeting, but I didn't get a copy.
Well, we could come back to you in a minute if you want to take a second to read it.
Well, and the question is, what does that mean? It is directing our staff to continue to work with the low bidder, which the resolution is working to award and determine an application of colored shoulders. It's important to note that this being a pass-through, federal aid pass-through project, that product, whatever it is, would have to be approved by the state. And the number that you're looking at presently as the alternate is the only alternate, or I should say, the only approved product that the state will allow on colored shoulders at this time. And to say that there's other ones out there that the state will approve, I cannot say that right now. We could try and we could ask and we could talk to the state and we could show them different products, but we'd have to have them approve a different product. And because of that, I also don't know what the cost would be.
Okay, that's helpful, but it does mean that the first resolve does award the bid so that work can begin, correct?
Right.
There's lots and lots to do before any decision has to be made about the shoulders. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And just for the public, the state, there was no state money in the Ellis Hollow Road project, so they didn't have any say one way or the other over what we did on the shoulders.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
Yep. Okay. No problem.
You might want to stay there.
Well, I won't go far.
Okay. Kathy Luce.
I was trying to figure out just what was meant by this last resolve, so it's fine with me that you asked to remove it, but my reading of it, and tell me how far off I am with this, is that was going to happen anyway since it's an alternate, but maybe I misunderstood. If by alternate, and I got a little more out from what you just said, we meant a different road material than that what was approved by the state, then that is a whole other thing for me. I was on facilities when we first started talking about this, and I've gotten an education in the intervening 7 years or so about colored shoulders and the different ways that we're working with that. And at the time, I'll tell you, I thought it was just a waste of money, but there's been some studies. They are conflicting. But I don't think right now it's going to go away. It's not exactly a fad. It's part of the way that we're figuring out how to make roads more usable by different communities than just cars, like that people who pay the taxes can also use the roads. So I'm not sure that I'd want to remove this if that's the intention, but somebody help me. Is removing this going to take away the highway director and staff continuing to work with the low bidder to investigate whether we can achieve the colored asphalt shoulders at a more reasonable estimate? I didn't think that was necessarily explicitly omitted. I figured it was going to happen anyway, but I wasn't at that last facilities meeting. So can somebody give me an idea?
So that's either a Jeff question or a Peter question.
Yeah, let me answer that question. I voted against this amendment in the committee, and that does not mean that I'm against colored shoulders and I'm not against using the extra money that we have left over to, in fact, do it in some way. But I don't believe it belongs in this amendment. I think this is best be a clean amendment that just says yes to the state, and we've been waiting for a long time for this project to be funded, and it's now funded. And I don't see why we should put this in here. The administration of the Highway Department understands that there appears to be some extra money, that we were looking at it as an alternative, and that it's a good idea to go ahead and see how we could best spend that extra money. They don't need this instruction. And it's not clear to me, for instance, that they ought to be working with the lowest bidder. Maybe they... with the bidder, maybe it should be done by somebody else at the, as an add-on to the project after the road is built. So I think this is a mistake. I think it just confuses the issue.
Adding it in or taking it out? I'm sorry, I don't get what you're saying.
What?
I don't understand. Is it a wrong idea to add that resolution, that resolved, or is it a wrong idea to ask to have it removed?
No, to me, the right idea is to have it removed because I don't think it does anything that can't be done without it, and it does have certain limitations on things that we might want to do. It's not helpful, okay? There's no opposition that I know of to examining the use of that to produce colored shoulders.
I appreciate hearing your opinion on that, and I'm assuming that Jim's is somewhere like that, because that's what I was trying to figure out.
Absolutely. Okay. My reason for putting it out was I would like us to vote on this straight project. If all of you need to feel around about colored shoulders or not, I'm opposed to colored shoulders, and you do whatever you need to do about that, but in terms of the resolution, I would just like the straight bid accepted and move on from there.
All right. I'm not sure we're talking about up or down on colored shoulders. I know you're next, Carl, but I don't think anybody's talking about $1.2 million on colored shoulders, and nobody's talking about using up all of the extra money in between the budget amount and the project and the bid, but the idea is there something... probably a much more reasonable estimate that might be done. So I don't think, if I can just get clarity, Jeff, I think the certain facts are important here. Will this hold up the work? If this is in here, does this hold up the work?
Walking up here, I asked John Lampman, and he confirmed to me. Now, my sense with these resolutions is that they are very structured. The state wants to see them in a certain format. John Lampman felt that this would not affect their position on this resolution. So the answer would be it will not affect the resolution going forward to the state if this further resolved is included in it.
Okay, thank
That's
you, Jeff.
The opinion of myself and John Lampman.
Okay, thank you. Carol, then Frank, then Peter, Dooley, Pat.
Yeah, I was one of the people who voted in the majority on the committee to move this forward to the legislature this way. And the reason that I did is, well, number one, we did not want to hold up the project. We wanted the project, the wording to be clear in the resolution, which it still is, that this project should move forward. Number two, we had discussion about the fact that during all of the public discussions about Hanshaw Road, there were discussions about coloring the shoulders if it would be possible. And number three, and this part I would like to be in the record, please, in the minutes. The information came to our committee that our consulting engineer had estimated that coloring the shoulders for this project should be in the ballpark of about $156,000. seeing the resolution that came to us and the bids that came to us, knowing that, first of all, we had a bid that was left us more than $1 million of leeway, and second of all, that the all of the bidders came in at a very high, over $1 million estimate for coloring shoulders, it just seemed like a very big disconnect. $156,000 that we thought this should take, which would have been, I think it's less than 2% of the project budget, to pursue something in a residential neighborhood. We can have discussions later about the comparison between the more rural, tree-lined Ellis Hollow Road and the and Hanshaw Road location with kids, you know, you can see them playing ball in the yards and safety considerations. But that it, we owed it to ourselves to learn more and make sure that our staff learned more about why the differences between the $156,000 that we expected and the $1 million. So we wanted it to be, we wanted to make sure, those of us in the majority on the committee, that that we didn't just throw up our hands and say, oh, $1 million, we obviously can't do that. I don't think any of us would want to do it for $1 million. But that we would like our, to instruct our staff to continue to pursue it in a manner and to give that instruction in a manner that was very clear-cut. So that's why I urge us to keep this in there.
Thank you, Carol. Frank, Peter Dooley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jim, I'm glad you brought this forward, and it's on the floor to pull it out. I appreciate that, and I was not in attendance at the meeting in Ellis Hollow, and I can certainly empathize with those folks that want colored shoulders living in Ellis Hollow. As I understand it, the width of the shoulder is not going to change regardless of the color. And most of us that live in the rural part of the county walk on shoulders, ride on shoulders, or whatever, without them being colored. Carol, I certainly appreciate what you just said, that if the disparity between 156, 157,000 and a million, that's quite a distance, it doesn't prevent anybody from looking at this without this being in the resolution. But I do want to mention that two of the highway departments, that two of the three that are in towns that I represent, are absolutely annoyed that we're spending this kind of time talking about colored shoulders. If there's money around to do this, and I've already mentioned two roads to Jeff that are in my neck of the woods that are in need of repair, we certainly can find other uses for this money throughout the county. There are roads throughout the county that could use some help. With all due respect to Martha and the folks in Ellis Hollow, I think we should vote for this amendment to pull this out, and if the highway department has time to spend examining this, leave it up to Jeff and his staff. But I think with the construction season being what it is, they're going to have enough on their hands, and we've got the budget to go through. So I hope you'll support Jim's amendment.
Peter?
Yeah, I said mostly what I was going to say, but just to respond to Carol, there's no mystery about it. We had, I forget, nine people bidding on this thing. They all came out with bids that were $1 million or more, and our engineer said it was going to, his guess was going to be $150,000. It's obviously no mistake, and I believe it has to do with that the state has selected a way to make color shoulders, and that way is a whole lot more expensive than the thing that our engineer thought they were going to use. We're not going to change that. I don't see why we have, but they'll ask, okay? I don't see why it has to be in the resolution to make them ask it. We're aware, I mean, I'm, you know, Jim is against colored shoulders. I'm agnostic on colored shoulders. I could go either way. But I don't believe that it has to be in the resolution. That's all.
Dooley.
Well, I don't know when if Jim was ever on F&I before. I've been on that committee a long time. I also live in the area of the project. It's been in the works for at least 7 years. And the expectation of neighbors there is that Colored Shoulders would be part of the project if we could possibly make it happen. It was extremely unfortunate that Ellis Hollow, just needing county money and not federal and state money, got in the queue first, did a version of Colored Shoulders that was new, hadn't been tried before. The person doing it was learning as he was doing it, I gather. And the result, nevertheless, gives people in that area an impression that it makes a difference. Hanshaw Road neighbors really expect this to be part of the project. I think Peter is correct that the Fisher estimate was ignoring the fact that within the last couple of years, the state has laid down guidance which says how colored shoulders or how colored pavement will be done, how they will use integrally colored polymer addition to the aggregate, I guess. And our staff knows that that's in place, and although staff usually will pursue alternates with the winning bidder to see what can be done, knowing that the state has this new guidance, I don't believe our staff would spend time pursuing it unless, as they learned at the committee, there are members of the committee who think that they owe it, or we owe it, to our residents to do this. So I was very pleased that this was able to be added to the resolution because I believe that they would not spend time doing this unless it were in there. And I hope that they will take the time to do that, and that's what this is, to give them guidance to do. So I obviously want this language to remain in the resolution. And we spent a long time going around in circles at F&I to try to understand. It was news to all of us, I believe, that the state had slipped in guidance that was not there a couple of years ago. And I think, although Peter said it's not going to go away, I think it's conceivable to work with the part of DOT that requires that to see if some kind of waiver or a different approach can be used in this project that's been in the works for so long.
I've got Pat, Brian, Jim, and Pam, and then I want to say something.
Thank you. I think that there is an emerging issue here that we really have not talked about, and that's the fact that we've had two major highway projects, and we've had to make decisions about whether this new, relatively new application is going to be used, or we're even going to investigate the possibility of using it. And we have not had any kind of a discussion about the implications going forward of the decisions we're making here. And I recognize that we don't do, you know, hundreds of major highway projects, but we will undoubtedly be doing other highway projects in the future. And before I could support even including this kind of language, which would direct our staff to consider this alternative, I would like to see a discussion which would perhaps result in some kind of guidelines for our highway department to work with that would provide some rational way to make these kinds of recommendations to us. I understand we have to make the final decision about it, but I can very easily envision in the future some other highway project that maybe it's not as appropriate in that situation to have the colored shoulders, but because we've, assuming we'd go ahead and do it with this one, because we've had these two projects that we've done colored shoulders, I think the impetus will be for there to be an assumption that this will be part of our highway projects going forward. And I don't know that we're at the point where we want to say to the public, either by inference or any other way, that from here on out, look at what we did in Ellis Hollow, look at what we're going to do in on Hanshaw Road, and yes, we can do it in your neighborhood too, when a number of factors can enter into that. It might not be as appropriate in some places. We may not have the money. In this case, there happens to be extra money that allows us this choice. But I think we have not had that discussion. And I think some guidelines that would help to establish a fair way of looking at the question is something that we need to do. So I am not going to support keeping this in here. I would like to see it come out until we can reach some mutual understanding as to how we would look at this new potential application so that it's fair to whatever highway projects we come up with. What if it means on the next highway project that we don't have extra money, but people have come to expect that this is what we're going to do? Are we going to raise property taxes next time to do this?
I've got Brian, Jim, Pam, myself, and then Dooley.
You might be able to guess what's coming here, but
if you call the question.
No.
Good.
No, not yet. I was not at that public hearing about this issue. However, the fact that it's attended by probably people local to the project, I don't find it tremendously shocking that they would be in favor of this sort of thing. Pat, you just mentioned the future projects. Pine Tree Road is coming fast on the heels of this one, and I can't believe that if we were to go ahead and do it for this project, that wouldn't be part of the next one. Which now you've got three big projects right in a row with it, and I agree with what you're saying that the first such project after those is going to feel as though they're second class citizens for not getting it. I got to tell you, it's troubling to me when people say we've got a disparity of $1 million when it was supposed to be, or when our projections are 156. So, Peter, you're not the only one that does math around here. I just did that math. That's $844,000, which Jeff, I'm wondering, would $844,000 maybe replace a bridge on Groton City Road in Groton? I know it's way up in the corner up there, but that's a worthy project as well. Not to mention, if worse came to worst, there's nothing wrong with saving money. If a project doesn't come in at the cost you think it might, you don't have to spend it.
That's a unique idea, Brian.
And to get back to this, yes, I will support this being taken out.
Jim, Pam.
Two comments. Jeff, I'm going to give you an opportunity to think about it. I would like you to do the best you can in giving us the results of the
speed data.
Yeah, the speed data on the other Green Shoulder Road. And my second comment is to you, Dooley. You can question me on a lot of things, but when you say I haven't been on the facilities committee long enough, I find that as a blessing, actually. And so what I would like is to Jeff to give me any any data. Oh, did you say they do too? Oh, yeah, well, I'm certain of that.
Okay.
You don't have to put words
in. Good, Pam.
We're on a ride, and the kids have been in the car too long, yeah. So. All right, I think that was Jonathan, so. Okay. Jeff, the question?
Hello, thanks. Try and say this. It's Ellis Hollow Road, where we've applied the green tint, the shoulder tint. The speed data that was taken on the newly constructed road without the green tinted shoulders for a length of about a mile, the speed data before the green shoulders and the speed data after the green shoulders have been put in up to this date have shown very little difference in speed, less than 2 miles per hour between the road before and the road after the same newly constructed road. So that's.
Thank you.
Pam.
Well, I don't know why we are debating whether, unless I don't understand what we're debating, but it seems to me we're just asking our staff to look into this more. We're not debating whether we should do these green shoulders or not, and. So I don't see anything wrong with asking our staff to look at this a little bit more closely. I just don't understand it. I don't know why this has taken us this long to eat, and we haven't even passed or dealt with it yet. I don't get it. I mean, if we were trying to decide whether to use green shoulders or not, paint our shoulders green, then I could see why we would have extended debate. But that is not the question before us with this proposed amendment. I will vote against this amendment because I think it's being proposed for the wrong reasons. I just don't think that there's nothing wrong with asking staff to look more closely at something.
All right, my turn then, Dooley. I agree with you, Pam. I'm sorry. I agree with what Pam just said, that this is not a decision on whether to do it or not. This is just, you know, well, and the issue of what Carol said about the discrepancy between 1.2 or 1.4 and 160, whatever, that suggests that, well, there's something funny that you know, the bidders had one thing in mind and our engineer had something else in mind. So this seems to be an evolving technology. We know that the people who did it on Ellis Hollow Road had not done it before. It was new and they were trying to experiment, and you know, we don't know what they might come up with next time. So it's clear there's a big question mark about what is this all about. Now, whether the state by the time that this project gets built, with 2015 or 16, I mean, when we're going to start, this right away. Okay, but maybe perhaps by the time that we actually make this decision, and we don't know if there's something else that the state might approve. But in any case, this might inform other projects that where this would be an issue. I agree with Pam. This is not promising anybody that we're going to do colored shoulders on their street. This is not promising Hanshaw Road that we will do it. This is just, let's look into it a little more. And, you know, if it comes out to be, and it doesn't mean, oh, goody, we have extra money in the budget, let's go ahead and spend it. It means that there's some flexibility that we should at least consider what our options are before just saying no to something that we don't even understand yet fully. So I would oppose taking out the resolve. I got Dooley and then Jim again.
So there seems to be some uneasiness about the idea that if a second road considers and even has colored shoulders, that we have set in motion something that will be inexorable for pretty much future projects. And I can understand why someone might think that. But I remember negotiating with Ward Hungerford a number of years ago about county shoulder policy, where the general intent was to do whatever the state told us, make them as wide as they want them. And working with Ward, we came up with a shoulder policy that said, for each project, we will decide on a case-by-case basis what the width of the shoulders are, would be appropriate for that project. And in many instances, that has meant going back to the state and saying that on a case-by-case basis, which the state finally came to look at as a reasonable way to look at things, we will have different width shoulders on different projects. And that's what we do now. We've done it for a number of years. We can do something similar with colored shoulders and decide it on a case-by-case basis. And that, to me, makes a lot more sense than just assuming it's going to keep happening. With respect to Hanshaw Road, I think it needs to be taken seriously, since residents assumed that we were going to look at this seriously. The state made us add a traffic light. That was no longer possible to put in as an alternate. So what got put in as an alternate was the green shoulders instead. And, or I shouldn't say green, colored. I'm assuming green will be the color because we went through looking at colors before, but I can't really say that for sure. I would be very sorry to see this language taken out. It was agreeable to staff that they would spend some time looking into this. And it makes more sense to work with the low bidder than to bring in somebody else after the project is done. At least that's usually true. And so to say that we don't have to work with the low bidder seems like a strange way to approach it. Thank you.
I'm going to go to Joe, who doesn't usually raise his hand, but always has something important to say.
Well, I don't know. I may just be a provocateur here. I think the reason we're struggling with this is because there is a bit of a shift in policy direction, I think, that we're talking about here. When we first began to talk about color shoulders on Hanshaw, I believe we talked about that in the context of traffic calming. The intent was to use colored shoulders to calm traffic. And we were able to say, when we were doing Ellis Hollow first, why don't we see how it works on Ellis Hollow? Why don't we use that as kind of a test case to see if it really does affect the speed of traffic on a road that's been resurfaced? And what Jeff has said, and I think it was said maybe more tentatively in committee than it was tonight, the data is showing us that there really doesn't seem to be much of an impact on speed. So if the intent of colored shoulders was to reduce speed to calm traffic, we're not seeing the results on Ellis Hollow that would lead you to conclude that it's an effective technique. Instead, what we heard on Ellis Hollow was the colors are maybe a useful demarcation between the road and the shoulders that are used by pedestrians and bicyclists. And that's what I mean by a shift in policy direction. If the legislature is saying that we ought to look at colored shoulders with that in mind, I think that's an important shift of policy. I will remind the legislature that on Hanshaw Road there are sidewalks being built, too, for pedestrians and for kids that ride bicycles. Just a couple of other things to throw in the mix, and I think Jeff has said it already, but with respect to savings, remember that about 85% of this project budget is supported with federal and state money, so the county is not saving $1.2 million. The county's savings still will be significant savings, but about 15% of $1.2 million. So it's not as if there's $1 million or so left over for us to spend. And in asking the highway division to take a look at colored shoulders, they can certainly do that. They can talk to the contract. But remember, this would be also changing the state's perspective on what is appropriate for colored shoulders, that they have spec'd out what they expect. So we would have to work with the state to see if they would vary from their specs. If they don't, then the entire cost of that would fall to the county to pick up. So again, just in terms of some facts, and I know there's a tilt to those facts, but I think those are important facts, particularly the one that relates to the shift in the policy direction of, you know, it just doesn't seem conclusive that this is an effective way of controlling the speed of traffic.
Okay, and all right, Jim, Carol, Pat, and Mike.
I'm going to call a question.
Second.
Okay, all in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. opposed? That passes. Wait, you're opposed, Brian?
Yeah.
Okay, that passes 9-4. Right. 10-4. 10-4. Right. All right, question is called. We are the question before us is whether to remove the last resolve from this amendment, from this resolution. All in favor of that amendment, please raise your hand. All in favor of removing, saying yes means you want to take this last resolve out of the resolution. Opposed. That passes 8-6. So that is out of the resolution. Now, 100 years ago, I had a list on the main motion that, well, Kathy Luce, I thought you were, are you back on that list? Okay, Kathy Luce, Frank, Carol, and Brian.
Okay, I'm glad we discussed the details that we did. I just need to get some of the math right. For example, it's talking about the 10%, you know, in the second resolve. Highway director be authorized to implement this bid and execute change orders. Total values not to exceed 10% of the aforementioned bid amount. Is the aforementioned bid amount $3,474,275.85? Okay, so what I understand this to mean, and just help me out with this, is if it was to exceed that amount by 9.5% or something, less than 347,427 dollars, then y'all would go ahead without coming back, at 59 cent or 58.5 cents, that y'all would go ahead without coming back to the legislature because it's within that amount. I wanted to make sure of that because okay, then the other part that I need to understand is the alternate that is has not been accepted is was bid at by the lowest responsible bidder at $1,217,636, but there's some belief by some folks who are on the committee, and I'm sorry, it's just taking me a while to catch up, that it should cost somewhere around $146,000. No, okay, I knew I had misunderstood something there, or that it could, that like there's a factor of a huge difference there. And if I'm understanding it correctly, part of what this last resolve's intent was to see if we could get those numbers closer together somehow. Now, how, somebody help me figure out how far off I am on this, because I'm catching up for a couple of years and missing out on what was going on with this. And I would like to stay apprised of it, partly because of the reasons that, that Joe and Dooley and Pam have mentioned. I'm going to stop there.
Okay. Your question is the difference with the alternate between the bidder's price for the colored shoulders and the engineer's price for the colored shoulders?
Well, that's a good perspective. There's about 12 questions in there. Clarify me, please.
Okay. Since we've... All right. Go ahead, Jeff.
First of all, the 10% in the resolution, that $347,000 would be our only local share, would be 10 or 15% of that. And then that whole piece, if it was a maximum, say 9.5%, like you said, that example, that most extreme example, the that would also have to be approved by the state as a change order on the contract. And then our portion that would only affect the county costs would be that 10 or 15% of that change order.
Okay.
So that you're not, you know, giving the highway director the ability to spend that full amount of money. It would only be 10 or 15% of that, our local share, or 5% of that, our local share. And then it would be also have the controls of the state being approved, and it would have to go back to the state for their approval because they'd be paying the majority of that.
That's
10%
great.
Of the total project.
Can I go on with the other kind of question I was asking about the alternate pricing versus what we thought the alternate pricing might be? And can you just talk to me a little bit about that?
I can try. The alternate engineering estimate of $156,000 was what we thought the neighborhood of this alternate was going to cost. That's what the engineer indicated to us. The state has a specification for shoulder coloring.
Okay.
One specification, one application type. And that type is what has to be used on all state projects. I'm not sure if the engineer estimated using that same type or didn't know. I'm not sure why the discrepancy exactly. But at this point, all the contractors bid on that same state specification, which is the only one that will allow on a state-funded project coloring of shoulders.
The clouds have lifted. Thank you.
Okay.
That's real helpful.
Thanks. All right. Thank you very much, Jeff. Back to the original list. Frank, do you still have something to say on the main motion?
Yeah. Thanks, Martha. The first question I was going to ask has been resolved with the removal of that last result. But, Joe, you mentioned that the county's share, I thought you said, was about 15%.
Yeah, that's the maximum county share.
Maximum county share. So, and that's based on about $3.5 million.
I'm sorry. Hold on. I was thinking the state share. The state share, yeah, let me roll that back. The state share is 10 to 15%, leaving 5 to 10% being the county share.
Okay. So the county share potentially is about $350,000, approximately.
Yes.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you.
Okay, Carol. Back to the main motion. You were on the list.
I don't have anything else to say other than that I support it, but we're having a side conversation here about the understanding about the count on the.
In 12 years, I've never voted accidentally the wrong way, but it seems like I just voted to remove that resolved, and that wasn't what I intended to do. I don't know if it makes any difference, but I got to admit I made a mistake.
Reconsider. There seemed to be a...
Can you, Kathy, check who voted?
I'm just saying.
In the majority?
I got to own it.
It was a negative.
She voted no on the motion.
You voted no. What?
So I voted not to remove it.
Did she vote
there
majority?
There were six. Who were the six who voted against the amendment?
I can give you the eight that supported it.
Okay.
Jim Dennis, Frank Proto, Brian Robinson, Nathan, Shinagawa, Mike Lane, Peter Stein, Pat Pryor, and Dave McKenna.
Okay, so I was wrong about being wrong.
Right.
But I'm still wrong. Okay, thank you. Sorry to hold
you
up.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right about being wrong.
What did
right.
I say? Anyway.
Take the positive. Right about being wrong.
So other than that, I support the main motion.
Okay, Brian.
I'm just... And no, I'm not on this committee either. But by reading this memorandum, before we, the Royal, had a discussion on colored shoulders, the bids went out with this as an alternate.
Right.
Okay. That's all I wanted to know.
All right, Julie.
If it's not too late, I would ask to have my remarks relevant to the now missing part of the resolution be incorporated in the minutes. And with respect to the missing part of the resolution, I would like to ask our highway director, highway manager, I can't,
director.
I'm sorry, if in spite of that removal from the resolution awarding the base bid, you will be able to and intend to take time to pursue other approaches, including talking to the state about a waiver. Would you have time to do that? Would you commit to doing that? Okay, thank you.
Yes.
I would like to be able to vote for this resolution, but I'm really worried about that. So thank you, Jeff.
All right, so from the microphone, that was a yes. All right, thank you. Anything else on the main motion? All in favor of with the revised And amended Resolution A. Please raise your hand.
Aye.
I don't see any opposition. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Peter, did you have any other part of your report?
No, I think that just about takes care of it. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Let us take a 10-minute recess, a little more than 10. Be back in your chairs at 8:15.